Välkommen till Tankeledarpodden. Här pratar vi om hur du kan accelerera din business eller din karriär med hjälp av LinkedIn, tankeledarskap och effektiv digital marknadsföring. Här delar vi det senaste innanför just detta så att du ska kunna skapa bättre resultat idag. Mitt namn är Kristoffer. Jag är vd och grundare av LinkedIn-kurs. Och vi har nu med hjälp av just tankeledarskap och LinkedIn hjälpt tusentals av professionella och hundratals av företag i Skandinavien med detta. Och i denna podden så ska vi dela det senaste från vår erfarenhet, från det vi gör med våra kunder och de tipserna och de trixerna och strategierna för att just du ska lyckas med detta. Välkommen och jag ser fram emot att dela detta avsnittet med dig. Välkommen till dagens avsnitt av Tankeledarpodden. Och idag har vi ett väldigt unikt avsnitt. Det kommer vara på engelska för att vi har två väldigt fascinerande gäster där vi ska prata om förhandlingstekniker. So I'll go over to English now. I'm really looking forward to this special episode with you guys, Jason and Roar from Mind Talk. It's going to be so inspirational. So firstly, welcome to Tankeledarpodden.
Tusen takk.
Thanks, Christopher.
I'm looking forward to this discussion. It's going to be very fascinating. So I usually kick these episodes off with an introduction. So if you guys can introduce yourselves, what you're doing professionally right now, and a little bit who you guys are, so the audience can get to know you as well.
Thank you, Christopher. My name is Roar Thun-Vegid. I'm a facilitator, advisor, and mediator, and I founded my company, Vegid Negotiation Institute, in 2017. I've then been working as a lawyer for 20 years, first with tax law and later with labor and employment law. And during that time, I've been advising a lot of clients in difficult negotiations. And I became more and more fascinated by the work and the solution that could be created outside the courtroom. So after spending some trainings at Harvard in the United States and Pepperdine universities, I figure out this is what I would like to do full time. So I'm running this and I have met Jason some years ago, and we find that we have a unique combination of experiences. So I will come back to how we met, but this is briefly who I am. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Jason Lim. I'm based here in Norway. I'm originally from Canada. My background is within the clinical and cognitive sciences, psychology. You know, about 20 years ago, I started my own firm called Mind Talk, sort of Selprat, that Mind Talk bit. And where I work with sort of organizations and corporations, both as a facilitator, and my kind of sort of into things is teaching people about the brain, teaching them about the science, not losing them in science, but teaching them fascinating aspects of the science, but practical ways of using it to lead, to communicate, and collaborate. A lot of my work actually stems from before working with corporate clients. I worked in sort of clinical settings where I worked with trauma, and that was more of my clinical experience. But when I moved to Norway, I saw there was kind of a need for this. There wasn't much emphasis on brain sciences or cognitive sciences in corporations or organizations, not even taught in business schools or marketing or advertising. So I saw a sort of a niche for that. And so a majority of what I do is actually that, is teaching the cognitive sciences. But you know, one thing is to lead, but sometimes we need to understand how to lead ourselves. And especially, Christopher, I guess over the last 2 years, you know, going with this bloody pandemic, is how do we deal with that, leading ourselves and others? And when I met Roar, you know, we come from two different disciplines, but we saw that there was so much overlap that in what we do that we could create maybe a really unique product. But I'll let Roar speak more to that.
So we met accidentally, can I put it this way, Jason, and we started talking, and quite soon we saw that what you are doing and what I am doing, it's bring up the same kind of goal into it. And that is to help people to solve their problems in the most easy possible way. Is it myself? Is it on behalf of others? So we thought, in the rational world that we think we are living, we are often using methods that we think will persuade others using the logic. But much of our decisions are made on emotions and psychology. Think only about when you go out and buy a house, how easy it's not to be influenced, how the nice fireplace is fired up and the candles are there, and you are influenced by emotions. And that is also when we are leading people, we are managers. So we thought, could we combine those two? So what we started to walk through some of the programs, training programs I'm running, we saw that we could combine this cutting edge neuroscience and psychology in collaboration with a well-known Harvard-based negotiation methods and to create a unique program. So our program is based on different models. So we address specific topics from the different approaches that Jason brings in and I bring in.
Fascinating. So very, very interesting. I love your approach. So a lot of negotiations is super important. So the thing we talk about a lot on these podcasts are thought leadership, LinkedIn, networking, sales, marketing, and negotiations is a part of everything there. So you talk about negotiations with brain and mind and with neuroscience, with psychology. So could you talk a little bit to that and how that differentiates from typical ways of doing negotiations, because I think this is the best way I've heard about it. So could you talk a little bit to that?
Yeah, sure. If I could just jump in here, Roar. I think, you know, with the brain in mind, we wanted to add that title to the negotiations because in English, we say to keep something in mind, to keep it present, keep it to be aware of. And I think, you know, from both of our experiences, as Roar was talking about before, is that, you know, human beings tend to make emotional choices, but we use logic and rationale to justify those emotional choices. And to, if anyone says you, they completely are just completely rational, analytical. Well, we know that's not true because, you know, the way the brain's just wired up, there's both the logical sides to it, and it's not split left and right, it's all over the brain. But to take part of the brain, to teach people about the brain, it adds a different layer to communication, collaboration, and cooperation that we see that, well, at least in Scandinavia, there's not a lot of people that help educate that. And I think part of what we see within schools and through traditional education, whether, as you said, whether it's whatever business oriented, we thought that brain bit was so important because the way we looked at the training, we see it as two levels of negotiations. First is the negotiation with yourselves, because when we talk about negotiations is sort of an umbrella word. And pretty much it's like, if I need to give a performance appraisal, sort of metabyte samtala, if I need to give feedback, if I need to have a difficult or challenging conversation, at the end of the day, it's all form of negotiations. But what we have discovered that, and what we know clearly, is that when we go into a negotiation situation or we have to have a difficult conversation, usually the first conversation is with ourselves, Because sometimes we have this self-talk, this mind talk, this inner dialogue where we say to ourselves, you know what? I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to upset someone. I don't want to look bad. I don't want to look like the person who's always pessimistic. And so it's the first part of that training is like, how do I deal with my own inner dialogue, my own inner hindering it, obstacles that I throw up? And then obviously, then there's the external, the negotiation or the difficult conversation actually with the other party. What's your take on it, Roar?
My take on this is that when I need to persuade somebody, it's often the obstacles is in me before I'm able to approach you. And that obstacle would also often be difficult. I think I have control of it. It's just to present my arguments to you, Christopher, and of course you will find them persuasive and you will change. We know that is almost never happened. I wish it could happen much oftener, but it doesn't. So this is a kind of a roadmap to deal with these challenges. So we draw elements from this map with us in the different steps that we have created. So we are able then to help you find the way you need in this particular situation. So maybe sometime you need to emphasize more on one step than you need on the others. And let me just try to be a little bit more specific. So I want to influence you in a decision that the board of directors have made. So I need to present this. And often maybe we go in and we present this as a way of, let me tell you how it is going to be. I will argue. I will influence you by convincing with words and actions how this should be. And we often assume that people will follow, but they rarely do, rarely does not. So what we need to do is to find ways that people would like to say, yes, that's right. And one of them is like to begin very before I even prepare myself is what we call the priming, to set the stage. Where is this going to happen? Will Christopher be prepared to meet me at this time? Does he have time enough? Is it a safe place to sit so he will not be watched by other people, etc., etc.? All this is what we call the priming. And then you can lead this on to showing empathy, to ask questions, to listen to the response, to be aware of the interest the other party may have into this case. And this seems sometimes very easy to list up or say, but to do this when you are in a stressful situation, you may be you have a very experienced manager, but you're going to bring a message to people that is very negative. And that is the most of us will be stressed in those situations. But by being aware of the inner turmoil that you have and focusing on that, that will help you in the meeting with the others when you are trying to create or send the message that will influence them the way you want it to go.
Interesting. This is super fascinating. So the thing you talk about, the inner game or the inner part of yourself, I know it's when I also work with the business leaders, professionals, people want to develop their careers, marketing managers, etc. It's actually a big thing. We have something called Janteloven here in, or Jantelagen in Swedish. And I know it's a big thing, even taking a leadership position. And I think it could be similar to also having difficult negotiations. So I think it's very important, and it's fascinating. So now you prepared yourself, you have the empathy towards the person and the understanding. I know you also speak about something called, because I'm so fascinated about you, what you've been doing. So you have the me and we concept that you talk about in the context of negotiations. So what is that about?
Well, when we look at it, you know, we always start with the me and then we branch out to the we. I think, and this is kind of where I dive in, you know, it's trying to find a sense of stability and grounding, because sometimes we need to have difficult conversations with high conflict personalities. There might be heightened emotions. And, you know, the dialogue, especially if it's a complicated one, if it's a difficult conversation, Christopher, emotions are going to get involved. And now how most human beings are when we get into a high conflict and we're trying to be diplomatic, we're trying to be understanding, if our emotions get triggered and we're not aware of it, we can go into, you know, what's called the F3 response, the fight, flight, freeze response, this survival mechanism that all of us can feel. It can be anxiety or anger or overwhelm or concern or just general stress. And so the me concept is trying to understand more about this reactive and reflective mindsets, teach people about it. Again, not lose them in the science, but if you understand the underpinnings of what's going on in your brain, that allows you to separate mind from brain. So you look at the brain as an organ, you know, like your heart pumps blood, your lungs pump oxygen, your brain is evolutionary designed to pump survival. And when you're in a high conflict situation, even if it is a difficult conversation, your brain is going to go into this survival primal mode. But what we teach in our workshops or individual coaching is how to step back from that, because it will get tricky. You can't stop it. But the question is, how do you choose to respond from there? And when you weaponize, if I can say that, psychology, teach people the psychology and the literal, the anatomical structures of what's going on in the brain, it educates people. It allows them to separate brain from mind, where they can step back and become more reflective and objective instead of sort of reactive and subjective. Because when we're reactive, we're just adding fuel to the fire. We're not helping the conflict. What we're actually doing is creating more division. But if someone in the heat of the moment, in the heat of the battle or the conversation, is able to step back by understanding and applying the methodology and skills that Roar and I teach, that gives them an added advantage, because they can feel themselves reactive. They don't bury their emotions, Christopher, but what they do is thinking, okay, I'm feeling this, but they use it as a source of information to help them make more decisive and clear decisions of how to proceed, because maybe they need to shut up and listen. And when the other person feels listened to, then things kind of calm down. But if it just becomes a war of words where we're just constantly reloading our guns and firing back and forwards, this is where the me concept is, because the me is about grounding. It's about finding a foundation of reflective and objective so you can approach the difficult conversation from a much more diplomatic point of view. And that leads more to the, yeah, please, Roar.
And to add to that, when Jason, it will then focus on the neuroscience and what is happening with my heart, what is happening with my brain, and talk about, you know, going from the reaction to the reactive, from the reflecting, I mean, from the reactive to the reflecting part. And then you had negotiation methods of preparation. How often do you prepare well before going into any kind of negotiations? And what we say, this is in the widest format of the definition of negotiations. So it can be all kind of conversations that you will have with others. So, but preparing well, both on the rational part and the arguments and the facts, but also how you will react. So you're more prepared you will be, the better it is to be able to be reflective when the other party is responding to you. And this creates certainty. But we also see a lot of people, they're going into a situation that will be, they're so nervous about, even you have a long time of experience, you feel this is kind of anxious to do this. And that is what we call overthinking. So you create so many elements into this that you have kind of a difficulty finding the right path to how to approach it. So be able to do that and prepare and don't overthink, and also create certainty for the one you're going to meet. Don't overrun them, but help them to say, okay, we're going to meet at this day, at this time, where it's going to be and how it's going to be shaped, etc. That helps to create a safe place for people to meet. And you don't, and you want to create those spaces that you will have a good conversation with other ones, not overrun them. And then use the communication skills as Jason talked about. And we have a lot to learn from the world of psychology and how they are approaching clients. I come from the legal world, and we are trained in arguments and in negotiations, and these kind of conversations, as many of the listeners have as managers, maybe they need to develop more the listening skills in combination with asking questions, maybe more than arguments. So,
and I think that listening, I think that listening, that's a good sort of segue, because when we move from the me, everything that sort of Roar just sort of articulated there, that carries over to the we, because part of what's, especially after this pandemic, one of the things we've understood, that two things that are so important in building teams and negotiating across the table, is psychological safety and actually what that means. You know, psychological safety is one of those we concepts, but sometimes the way it's taught, it becomes a corporate buzzword. But what we do, we break it down to the sort of the social, cognitive, and psychological aspects of that, that translate that into specific concrete skills that people understand. We also teach other concepts of the we about empathy. Now, if you ask generally, Christopher, what is empathy? You know, you'll have the general answer, oh, it's feeling what the other person's feeling. That is empathy sort of in the traditional sense. But when you're negotiating, the last thing you want to do is use emotional empathy. So what Roar and I teach, and we go quite heavily into, is something called cognitive empathy. Now, cognitive empathy is a type of empathy, but I'm not trying to emotionally feel what you're feeling, because the whole point of negotiating or having a difficult conversation is to try to stay reflective and objective, whether I'm a leader or a boss, what have you. Because if I start emotionally trying to relate with what you're going through, what does that mean? Well, we're emotional creatures. So if I feel you're angry, that might make me feel angry. Or if I feel you're feeling anxiety, that can affect me. It's just the way the brains work. And so cognitive empathy, on the other hand, what that means is that I become emotionally guarded, that I don't want to feel exactly what you're feeling, because I need to keep my objective distance. Because as a leader, I want to help you to solve your problem. Or if I'm negotiating or having a difficult conversation, together we're trying to receive. So cognitive empathy, what does that mean? It means I'm still present. I'm listening, as Roar was talking about. I'm taking notes. I'm trying to relate and understand your needs, your wants, your positions. But I'm not trying to emotionally relate with you. And these are specific skills that are so important, so essential in today's leadership, especially coming out of this pandemic, especially when we link it to psychological safety or difficult conversations, which we can be emotionally heavy. Then we can see actually how important communications, but communicating with the brain and mind, and how that is essential. Because the thing is, you and I, Christopher or Roar, we could walk into a party. We don't know anyone there. And there's the host, he or she invites us in. But we see in the corner two people laughing. we don't know what they're talking about. We don't know, but they're laughing. But all of a sudden, a smile crosses our face, right? And we will be infected by that. Or we could walk into a room where we see two people are morose and quiet, maybe sad. It's a heavy. All of a sudden, we will adjust our emotions based on how they are. And that's just, we don't even have to think about it. Our brains do that automatically. And so that is why it's so important to understand this we concept of psychological safety and cognitive empathy and how they work. And more specifically, what Rohr addresses is sort of the listening and the questioning side of things.
To add on to that, Jason, and this empathy part, we see that is growing more and more awareness in the development and neuroscience. And we are using that in my part of the world, in the negotiation world, to understand the other person, both on an emotional level, and using that understanding for the crucial element of building trust. Trust and rapport in a negotiation is crucial. So when you have that, you can disagree quite heavily, but you know what I'm putting out there that you can rely on. And if you want to collaborate with people or create a deal, have that difficult conversation as a manager, you could have that, but also be fair, square, and quite hard on the solution that you would like to propose to the other party. And that combination of soft and hard is the element in the Harvard negotiation method that developed from the 70s. That is the main negotiation method that we find all over the world. So this combination and raising the awareness of the neuroscience and the brain, how that affects us in those difficult situations, to use the widest word on it, is very important to lead people and to close deals and to manage well, is my summarizing.
Wow, this is amazing. I love it. It's so much information. I'm just a little bit mind blown here. But I think it's important to learn negotiations, and especially this approach, having the cognitive empathy, understanding the other person. And I like the part you said last word as well, having both the hard part and the soft part together. Very, very fascinating. And also for me, I'm a marketer to my bones, like understanding these concepts, having the cognitive empathy. I talk about empathy a lot in marketing as well. And when you build thought leadership and when you utilize LinkedIn and when you communicate with others, I think it's very, very important. So this is more for me personally. I'm a little bit curious about this. So you talk about like your concepts, how you teach this. But what kind of companies do you usually work with, and what kind of people do you help out with this, and do you like to work with as well, and what kind of companies are you more inspired to work with? It's just a curiosity.
Yeah, I mean, I can drop some company names, but I mean, a lot of my focus is here in Norway, so I work with a lot of Scandinavian companies, you know, specifically, you know, sort of like with Telenor and PGS, and, you know, I've worked with Storebrand and CD and different companies here. But one of the ones I'm most privileged to work with is something that kind of spans globally, and that's the United Nations. And so I work with a system staff college there where we teach the same skills to, you know, heads of different agencies, whether it's the WHO or UNAIDS in different areas of the world. So, you know, from my personal experience, it's regardless of the business or the branch of it is, at the end of the day, it's about human beings interacting with other human beings. It just takes the different permutation or form of a business, whether it's seismic, oil, banking, law, medical, what have you. But at the end of the day, what inspires me is just, you know, when you have managers or leaders that are hungry to improve their game, to up their game, to support and to build better teams and or working groups, right? And it's, you know, we talk about negotiations, but I think it's how they give feedback, how they clarify expectations, how they confront and how they build their people. I think that's kind of important for me. What's your take, Roar?
My take is, you know, some of the same as you mentioned there, but I work with a lot with different associations and fagforeninger, as we say in Norwegian and Swedish, also private companies, but also managers in the public sector. And I will say managers, doesn't matter what branch, what sector you are in, the same situations, working with people, you will meet all over. So, on my side, except for my business part, I work a lot with youths. So I've been for many years working with an American conflict resolution organization. And last year, I've actually founded an NGO together with my family, what we call Sport for Understanding, when we combine people, youths working with sports and also raising awareness of understanding other people and using those skills that Jason and I are teaching in our professional life. And that is very, very rewarding. This morning, as an example, Jason and I had a talk with our colleague in Singapore, and we are planning a workshop in May. And that is to business leaders in Asia. The topic there is to target, you know, the as an example, the environmental issues that a lot of companies see today. So many of them will have an inner conflict regarding, yes, we have to be aware of the environmental problems that our products is creating or where it comes from. We also had a need to see the business growth, economic growth in our business. And we have the social, corporate social responsibility that our board have set for us. So how do you balance all these elements? And in a question like this, you will see the element of negotiation with the brain in mind, because you have the inner turmoil, you have the inner elements that you need to deal with, and use the negotiation skills, how you approach political leaders, the market, the public, employees, and the business or board of directors. So it is universal in a way of approaching, as long as you are working with people.
And I think based on that, you know, just to riff on that sort of conversation we had with our colleague in Singapore, you know, the climate is becoming it's a huge front issue that sits first of mind. And I think it's, you know, when we talk about negotiation with brain and mind, that's just a title we use. But at the end of the day, it's two difficult conversations. It's one with these leaders that have to kind of balance between taking care of their employees and growing the business, but at the same time, being environmentally and socially responsible. And sometimes this creates a value clash, as you said, an internal conflict. And so by teaching people both how to deal with their inner conflict and how to communicate with themselves, and then turn that out to the market, to the colleague, to their clients, to whoever. I mean, you can see how important it is to be able to communicate on many different levels, but we can still use the same skills for ourselves, for those that we lead or those that we collaborate with. And so the negotiation with the brain and mind, I think it becomes even more and more relevant, because we can see the complexity and the different dimensions that difficult conversations can span, especially with all these growing issues that are, you know, front and center for everybody right now. But I think back to your question, I think when you said where we find the most rewarding, I think Roar and I were speaking just before this podcast, a lot of it comes through the group training we do, but I think we both work also as individual sparring partners or coaches. So once we've taught a concept, we will meet with individual clients on a one-to-one basis. So we take the knowledge and we take the skills that we've taught, and in our one-to-one conversations, we help them to bridge the new knowledge, the new skills, but to apply it practically to their day-to-day. And so this is where both Roar and I find, you know, which is so rewarding when we have these one-to-one conversations through a coaching dialogue that we have with individual clients, I guess, Christopher.
We call that experience-based learning. So you work with individuals, or you can work with a small group, and you see when they have the common words, they know they have the same language, and especially when you have the training for an organization or a company, they have the same words they are using. They have the negotiation language, or you can say the management language, and use that in a smaller group where they share experiences, build on the same fundamentals of sharing, having trust, having rapport with each other, so they develop. And then working on the sparring one-to-one is very, very rewarding. And it's great to see how people are taking decisions in many different directions, both good for themselves, but also, of course, for the company they are working for.
Interesting. Inspirational. Wow, just the more I speak with you guys, the more I just realize how important negotiations is. And I'm just learning a lot here. Very, very inspirational. So I would like to know also, you talk about the importance for the future. And I realize it now as well. Negotiations is something everybody really needs, especially professionally, but also personally. But where do you guys, what's your vision? Where do you see yourself, and where do you want to be in the next 3 to 5 years? That would be really fascinating to know as well. And where do you also see the future going of negotiations and the way you train it with the brain and mind inside of negotiations?
May I start, Jason? I see we are heading towards increased awareness of, like you just said, Christopher, the broad range of what negotiation skills is about. It's not only the contract that some lawyers are signing with each other. It is a life skill. It's a people skill that we use every day. If it's with my 3 kids, if it's where we're heading for vacation this summer, as Jason said, if you're going to have Chinese or Indian today, and raise that awareness among people that are managing others is very, very important. And to see that we have we are using the developed and new skills that we can, knowledge that we get from the neuroscience, and add that with other elements that have been developed, like different negotiations method. And awareness of that inner and outer dialogue that we have, each of us, every day. That's some of my thoughts, Jason.
Thanks, Roar. I think is important, you know, Roar has invited me where we work with some of the law schools here in Norway and Tromsø and in Oslo and such, you know, helping students and teaching that. So, you know, obviously, you know, there is the normal things we say that, you know, the students, the young are sort of the future in a sense. So what I'd like to see is more of an integration of the brain science with communication, but as standard practice, not as an extra, but as the core of universities that are spitting out all these, you know, young, educated, intelligent people, whether it's marketing or advertising or accounting or negotiations or law, whatever field. Because one of the things working with Roar to build these kind of platforms with the law schools, but you know, one of the schools I work here with, I've been the privilege of with Bjorknes. They've changed their name, but with Bjorknes High School here, where I work with the faculty and the admin to teach them this brain science. So, you know, what I see in the future is that, you know, Roar and our product, this negotiation brain and mind, becomes part of a leadership program that we built for various companies. But again, that has all to do with scaling and how broad. But from a theoretical, idealistic perspective, I'd like to see these skills being taught at all levels as a core subject when we're teaching leaderships, whether it's within corporate leadership or if it's out of the colleges and universities, because I think these are such essential skills. Because you can see now, especially I'm from Canada, and we see our cousins down in the States, in the United States, how divisive it is, you know, how social media is creating these echo chambers. And I think it becomes so important to be able to teach these skills of listening and reflecting and being objective and building psychological safety and trust, as Roar was talking about. So that's a very idealistic, big picture perspective, but I hope that kind of answers your question, Christopher.
I love it. It's very, very, yeah, I'm just realizing more and more, and I'm learning so much right now about negotiation, and I can really see that and understand why it is so important for the future. So this has been a very inspirational episode. I'm very grateful that you guys came on Tankeleda Podden. And for somebody who has listened now, and it's impossible not to get inspired and to learn something from this, if they want to know more about you, maybe follow you, get more content, get on courses, where can they reach you?
They can reach us.
Or once you begin.
Yeah, I can do that. They can reach us on our web pages. Jason's web page is Mind Talk, and mine is Vegar Negotiation Institute. And you will find us on Facebook and LinkedIn and our web pages. So I would like to say thank you, Christopher, for inviting us. It's very nice to be able to be here and talk about a subject that we believe strongly in. And we know it is helpful for so many people to in development of themselves and their organizations to create better deals. Thank you.
Yeah. As Roar said, they can reach out to us at mindtalk.no or Vegard Institute. But they can also reach out. I call myself Mindtalk Coach, so they can find me on Instagram or Twitter and such. And a lot of those places where I interact with people, you know, whether it's bits of information and such. But we can provide all that contact information that maybe you can include in the end of the podcast afterwards, Christopher.
Yeah, I'll include it. And I'll link to your LinkedIn profiles as well. For most of the audience are going to connect with you there. Awesome. All right. Thank you again, guys. And hopefully you enjoyed this podcast as well. And see you again, like, soon in the future. And I'm going to go on one of your courses and get inspired as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Christopher. It was a blast. Thanks.
Cheers.
Thank you.